All right, so we're diving into this legal case, and let me tell you, it's a doozy. State v. Stasio, it's a 1979 New Jersey Supreme Court case, and well, it throws a wrench into the whole I was too drunk to know what I was doing defense.
Yeah, you know what's so interesting about this case, State v. Stasio, it really made the courts take a hard look at this whole idea of criminal intent. Like, if someone commits a crime when they're drunk, can they really be held responsible? It's a tricky question.
Okay, so paint us a picture. What happened?
Okay, so picture this.
Yeah.
October 7th, 1975. The Silver Moon Tavern in Clifton, New Jersey.
Sounds like the start of a good story.
It is. Our main player is Thomas Stasio, and he spent, oh, a good chunk of his afternoon at the bar. Later that night, he tries to rob the place.
Wait, hold on. So this guy's drinking all afternoon, then tries to rob the bar. That's bold.
It is, right. But here's the thing. Witnesses said he didn't even seem drunk.
Really? So where's the too drunk to know what he was doing defense come in?
Well, that's where it gets interesting. Stasio's lawyer, he was planning to argue that his client was just too intoxicated to form the intent to rob a place. That's like a key part of proving the crime, right? But the judge, he wasn't having it, wouldn't even let Stasio testify about his drinking.
What? Seriously, the judge wouldn't even let him explain. That doesn't seem right.
It might seem a bit off, but the court was wrestling with a much bigger issue. Does voluntary intoxication, like, does that mean someone can't have mens rea, you know, a guilty mind, the mental state you need for a crime? That's what State v. Stasio is all about.
So it's not as straightforward as, hey, I was drunk, I didn't mean it.
Not at all. And this is where specific intent versus general intent comes in.
Oh, yeah, I remember that from law school, but
Yep.
Refresh my memory.
Sure. Think of it this way. You're at the grocery store, right? You absentmindedly slip a candy bar into your pocket. You didn't plan it, you just
Okay.
did it. General intent, right? But if you spend weeks planning a bank heist, every detail mapped out, that's specific intent, a particular goal in mind.
Okay, got it. So where does Stasio fit into this whole specific versus general intent thing?
So assault with intent to rob, that's what Stasio was charged with. It's a specific intent crime. Prosecutors had to prove he assaulted someone with the intent to rob. Stasio's lawyer wanted to argue he was too drunk for that specific intent, but the court said, nope.
So what was their reasoning? Why the hard line?
Well, the Stasio court kind of threw out this whole specific versus general intent thing when it came to intoxication. Too subjective, they said, could lead to all sorts of different outcomes. They referred back to an older case, State v. Atkins, which set a really high bar for using intoxication as a defense.
High bar. What do you mean?
Basically, you got to be so intoxicated, like your faculties are completely gone, almost like you're passed out.
So just being like tipsy or even pretty drunk, that's not enough.
Nope, not even close. And Stasio doubled down on that idea. They didn't want people getting a free pass just because they were drunk, worried about the message it sent.
So it's like you chose to drink, so you deal with the consequences, even if those consequences are breaking the law.
Yeah, you can put it that way. They really stressed personal responsibility. You're accountable for what you do, even if you're impaired because of your own choices.
Man, this case really gets into some deep stuff. Personal responsibility, the whole justice system. But didn't the court disagree on this? Wasn't it a split decision?
You're right. This is where things get even juicier. It was a 4-3 decision, so not everyone agreed. We've got some pretty interesting concurring opinions that bring up some really important points and show just how complex this whole issue is.
Okay, let's break those down. What were the main arguments?
All right, so first up, you have the majority opinion written by Justice Schreiber. He laid out the main argument against using intoxication as a defense for most crimes. Said it should really only matter when you're talking about premeditation in first-degree murder cases.
Wait, so you're saying if you're so drunk you can't even plan a murder, maybe that's a defense. But for anything else, tough luck.
Pretty much, yeah. But Justice Handler, he wrote a concurring opinion, agreed with the outcome, but not with how broadly the majority rejected intoxication as a defense. He thought there should be some room for looking at it case by case, especially when someone might be temporarily insane due to intoxication.
Interesting. So, like in some cases, being really intoxicated could be like having a mental illness.
Exactly. And that opens a whole other can of worms, legally and ethically. Then there's Justice Pashman. He also wrote a concurring opinion and was the most critical of the majority. He called their decision a step backward and predicted the legislature would have to step in and clarify the law.
And did they?
You bet. Just a year later, New Jersey adopted the Model Penal Code standards for intoxication defenses, which took a more nuanced approach. So you could say that State v. Stasio really pushed for change in how New Jersey handles intoxication in criminal cases.
So State v. Stasio, it really shook things up in New Jersey's legal world. But let's get practical here. What does this all mean for lawyers, you know, especially those dealing with intoxication as a defense?
Well, imagine this. You're a defense attorney in New Jersey right after Stasio. You've got a client committed a crime. They were intoxicated. And they're saying, hey, it's the alcohol. It's the drugs. That's the reason. What do you do?
Honestly, the first thing I'm thinking is an intoxication defense even possible after Stasio? That prostration of faculties standard the court set. That's a tough one to meet.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's a hard sell. After Stasio, it's not enough for your client to just, like, slur their words or stumble a bit. You'd need to show they were so intoxicated they basically didn't know what they were doing, way beyond just being drunk or high.
So what kind of evidence could actually convince a jury after Stasio? What would it take?
You'd need to build a really strong case. Think witness testimony, expert opinions, you know, maybe even medical records if they ended up in the hospital because of how intoxicated they were. You want to show this person was so far gone they weren't in control.
Okay, but even with all that, wouldn't the jury still be thinking, well, they shouldn't have gotten so messed up in the first place? It feels like that personal responsibility thing is a big hurdle.
You're right. That's the risk with an intoxication defense. It could backfire, make the jury less sympathetic to your client. So as a defense attorney, you're always weighing those pros and cons. It's tricky.
Let's talk about jury instructions for a second. How does a judge explain this whole prostration of faculties thing to a jury? Because that's got to be confusing.
Oh, yeah. Jury instructions, they're super important in these cases. Judges, they have to be careful. They got to emphasize that, hey, voluntary intoxication, it's not a defense except in very specific, limited situations. Make it clear to the jury, just being drunk or high, that doesn't mean you get off the hook.
So basically, the jury instructions are like Stasio in a nutshell, making sure everyone understands the rules.
Yeah, exactly. And remember how Stasio wasn't allowed to talk about his drinking? Well, that became a big deal when the case was appealed.
Oh, right, right. Didn't he get a new trial because of that?
Yep. The appellate court, they said, preventing him from testifying about his drinking violated his due process rights. So even though proving intoxication is difficult, defendants still have the right to explain what happened. Then it's up to the jury to decide if their level of impairment meets that legal standard.
Yeah, makes sense. You can't just silence the defendant. But, doesn't this create some ethical dilemmas for lawyers?
Totally. Think about it. You're a defense attorney. Your client swears they were blackout drunk, no memory of the crime. But, you know, based on the evidence in Stasio and intoxication defense, probably won't work.
Yeah, that's a tough spot to be in. So do you, like, try to talk your client out of it, even if they want to go for it? Where's the line between your duty to your client and, you know, your ethical obligations to the court?
That's the million-dollar question. As a lawyer, you have to represent your client, but you also can't mislead the court or make arguments that have no basis. It's a balancing act, for sure. Cases like this, they show how tricky it can be to navigate legal strategy and ethics.
Being a criminal defense attorney, it sounds like a minefield. Constantly making tough calls that can change someone's life.
Oh, it's a challenging field, no doubt. But so important. Cases like Steve v. Stasio, you know, they might seem like just theory to some, but they have a real impact on how justice works, you know, legal strategies, courtroom procedures, people's lives.
All right, so let's boil all of this down. What are the key takeaways from State v. Stasio that lawyers and law students really need to remember?
I'd say three big things. First, intoxication defenses in New Jersey, they're tough, really tough. You need rock solid evidence of serious impairment to even have a chance. Second, you have to be really careful about documenting excluded testimony, especially in these intoxication cases. Could be crucial for an appeal. And third, remember that Stasio, it set a high bar, but the law, it changes. New legal arguments, new strategies, they're always coming up, especially with all the issues we're facing with addiction and substance abuse these days.
So State v. Stasio was like a legal earthquake, and we're still feeling the aftershocks today. It's still influencing what happens in courtrooms.
That's a great way to put it. And it shows how the law isn't stuck in the past. It changes with society, new challenges, even as science learns more about things like addiction and how the brain works.
Yeah, even though this case is decades old, it's still so relevant today.
Absolutely. The stuff that State v. Stasio brought up, it's still being argued about, still being fought over in courts. You can see its impact everywhere. jury instructions, trial strategies, how criminal codes are changing all over the country, it's a case that every lawyer, especially those working in criminal law, needs to know.
We've really gone deep on State v. Stasio, all the legal ins and outs, how it changed things in the courtroom. But, you know, before we finish up, I kind of want to step back for a second. This case brings up some bigger questions about how we as a society think about intoxication and, you know, who's responsible when a crime's committed.
Yeah, you're right. State v. Stasio, it really opens up this whole discussion about how what's happening in society and what science is discovering can change legal ideas.
Right. I mean, think about it. Our understanding of addiction, substance abuse, it's changed a lot since 1979. How does that impact how we view these intoxication defenses now?
That's the big question courts are dealing with more and more. Take the opioid crisis, for instance. A lot of times it starts with a legal prescription, but then things spiral, you know, and then maybe criminal behavior like stealing or dealing drugs. It makes you wonder, should those people be held responsible the same way as someone who just decided to get drunk and, you know, then committed a crime?
That's a good point. Is it really fair to say that someone struggling with a serious addiction, are they making choices the same way as someone who just chooses to get drunk and then breaks the law?
That's the heart of the debate. Some legal experts, they argue that with severe addiction, a person's ability to think clearly, make good decisions, it's so messed up that it's almost like they're intoxicated against their will.
So are we heading towards a future where addiction, it's seen as something that makes a crime less serious? Kind of like how we sometimes consider mental illness.
It's definitely possible. Some states are already doing that. You know, they're making laws that give people options besides jail time if they committed crimes while battling addiction.
That sounds like a more humane approach. Yeah. Just punishing someone who's trapped in addiction, it might not really solve the problem, right?
Exactly. The law, it needs to keep up with what we're learning about science, about people. State v. Stasio, it shows how hard it is to find that balance between holding people accountable, being compassionate, and really understanding these complex issues like addiction.
This is why I love these deep dives. You know, we started with this robbery, and now we're talking about justice, accountability, what it means to be human. It's fascinating.
You said it. It really reminds us that the law, it's not just a bunch of rules. It's about how we apply those rules to real life. And that's always changing. Cases like State v. Stasio, they show that this conversation never really ends.
So for everyone listening, especially those in the legal world, State v. Stasio is more than just a famous case to remember. It's a chance to think critically about how the law works in the real world, especially as we learn more about addiction and all its complexities.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It really pushes us to think about not just the rules, but the meaning behind them, the purpose, how they can change as we understand more about ourselves and society.
Well, this has been an amazing deep dive into State v. Stasio, a case that shows us the law is alive, it changes. It's shaped by what's happening in society and what we're learning about people.
Absolutely. It's a case that people are still talking about, still using to shape legal strategies all these years later. And for those who want to explore this area of the law even more, we've got some great resources linked in the show notes. Go check them out.
And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp, folks. Remember, the most interesting legal cases, they're the ones that make us think, that leave us with more questions than answers. The ones that make us grapple with the always changing nature of justice and taking responsibility.